Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Tuesday. The Big Ten is back Friday night, Fighting Illini in Wisconsin, to break down that game quarter by quarter, play by play. Former left tackle, stalwart with the Oilers / Titans, Brad Hopkins, is on the line with us. No, that's not actually why we brought him on, to break down B-hop. Illinois and Wisconsin.
Oh, B-hop. No, that's what we're doing. No, that's what we're doing.
Stick to the plan.
That's what we're going to do.
Are you excited that Big Ten football's back?
For those kids that put so much hard work, blood, sweat, and tears into at least putting themselves in a position for the NFL to see them and have their season canceled, yes.
Yeah.
For those smaller colleges that could use that check that the Big Ten provides on a yearly basis to keep them in out of the red, yes. So there's a lot that goes into that, not just them being able to play sports and keeping athletes healthy and safe. I understand that, but they face no less peril than the regular Joe that either wants to go to work but has no job to go to, or just basically doesn't mind sitting at home because the doors are closed at his office. So it's a conundrum we're all facing right now.
How do you think it's going to look? They're starting up their season at the end of October. How do you think it's going to look starting Friday night?
Well, I think, it's going to be a streamlined version. Obviously, it's not going to be a lot of, interconference play, which, would make it at least seem a little more centrally focused on, what those guys are able to do within their own divisions, right? I just think that as if they can compete for a national championship, it still keeps some of the shine and luster to the programs that have made strides over the past couple of years, The Big Ten needs Nebraska to be strong. Sure, it's great to have Minnesota step into a program, and, Iowa's always consistent, but, how about they had, someone else to fight for the eastern side of the division other than Ohio State or Michigan? It would just add parallels to the division that could definitely use some strength on the west side. I mean, they've invested a lot in Champaign to be competitive and win Chicago in the recruiting battle. Lovie Smith is one of a Super Bowl up there in that city. So why should he lose, those top recruits to Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, Northwestern, Iowa? But he is. And until they create a facility and give them a chance to compete, it's hard. But they still need some sort of complement to make the trip to Indianapolis worth it. Because for the most part, if it ain't Ohio State or Michigan that are vying for the Big Ten championship, the Big Ten doesn't get to throw a hat into the ring of a national championship. It just won't even be in that discussion.
Yeah. How difficult of a challenge are the Titans facing with Taylor Lewan being out the rest of the way?
Well, when it's going to get hairy is if you're in passing down situations, because I'm going to tell you what, bro, both of these guys have struggled on the edges. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a former tackle, but it's obvious. J.J. Watt moved over to the left side when Taylor went out for a reason.
Yep.
It paid off. Sack and a fumble. That's going to happen on a regular basis if you're in situations where Ryan Tannehill has to extend the play within the pocket. The pocket won't have that kind of time for him to let routes develop like that, especially when you need explosive plays and you need to get back in the ballgame. So that makes the run game that much more imperative. If you can control the line of scrimmage and stay in play action situations where the defense is left on its heels because they don't know if you're passing or running the ball, that's to your advantage. You can hit big strikes like that. Corey Davis has the ability to get down the field. A.J. Brown can control stuff underneath if need be. We've seen a lot of use of the tight ends, even though Johnny went out in that game. Berkster came in and got 113 yards. Why? Because Art loves the tight end. So we can find ways to be creative, but you can't in 3rd and 10, 3rd and 15. There's not a lot of play calls that are designed to convert those kind of third downs. But as long as they can keep feeding the beast, letting this flipping left tackle playing running back come downhill at you, then they have the ability to stay on the field, convert third down, move the chains, and keep Ryan Tannehill safe.
He doesn't run like a left tackle when he gets in open space, I can tell you that.
What did they say? He ran 21.6 miles an hour last night, or something like that?
Yeah, it's incredible to watch.
In the world.
That's unbelievable.
Dash, Darren. I don't think that he's faster than Lamar Jackson. They said he was in the open field.
But, I'm not sure about that. But
yeah.
You played with Bruce, and he moved all around. And so they're exploring all the options, you know, and maybe if it, you know, it won't probably be initially, but at some point you don't know how this is going to play out. Maybe they have to move a guard. You know, Saffold has played tackle. What goes into, I know you were a stalwart at left tackle, but guys you played with that moved around guard to tackle, is that a big deal, not a big deal?
Justin Hartwig.
Yes.
Came as a tackle. Moved to guard. Played center for us.
Yeah.
Kevin Long was a guard. Ended up playing center in the Super Bowl for us. Bruce, like you said, Bruce was all pro at four of the five positions up front. So moving around, I wanted to play center when I got into the last two or three years of my career.
Really?
Because, heck yeah, because you're protected on both sides.
Aren't you too big to be a center?
Yeah. Justin was taller than me.
Was he?
It's
I didn't remember.
For a guy, you're right. You're right. When you're talking about, you know, 6'2", 350-pound nose guards, you know, or Aaron Donald, who's 6'1", that play with extreme leverage. I mean, sure, it's a disadvantage for any interior guy to be tall. But if you're an athlete, if you've got, you know, pliable muscles, you can get low, you're flexible, and you can do that. But, you know, being in open space at 36 years old, whew, that can be perilous. So I wanted to get inside Ross, protected by the guards on either side, you know?
I don't think I've ever heard you say that before,
that you wanted to play center.
I was taking center snaps in practice. I was running the scout team. You know how numbers get low, you know, toward the end of the season, especially guys going IR. You know, you're running kind of thin. You just jump in when you can. We saw the Titans coaches, you know, playing certain situations for their guys to get ready, right? Well, shoot, I was snapping the ball back there to the second string quarterback, just so we can give him a look. And I thought, shoot, this is nice in here.
I'm not on an island by myself anymore.
Exactly. I'm out over here telling Steve to throw the damn ball. I'm over here, you know, I just snap it to him. I'm good. Good in here.
We're talking to Brad Hopkins, longtime Tennessee Titans left tackle. And so, Brad, if it were you, now, of course, you're not in the room and you don't know all the ins and outs of these guys, but do you have a sense of what would be the most logical thing to do from where you sit? Because Dennis Kelly has played both tackles. Like, how hard is it? Just let's start with the Dennis Kelly moving from one side to the other side. How difficult is it, even for a guy that's done it?
Well, I will say, having been thrust in a situation in the middle of a game, it's hard. You know, you can't expect a guy that's going to stay on the sideline sipping Gatorade. You know, all of a sudden Taylor's laying on the field and thinking, oh, crap, I got to start stretching. You know what I mean? So that's one thing. Either Dennis or Ty is going to have a week of practice, you know, going through being with the ones, you know, the tempo of it, the flow of it, hearing Ryan's calls, being an extensive part of the game plan. That'll give him, either one of them, more time to prepare. They'll be better than they were from what we saw this weekend. But it still doesn't change the overall base skill set. You know, Ty is not Taylor. Dennis is not Taylor. And if Taylor's injury extends past August, you know, the reality is you might need to start thinking about some successors, just the way the business goes. And if your left tackle is a liability, it's going to hurt you. Shoot, I mean, how many times can they run 12 personnel? That's what I'm asking.
Yeah. So
put two tight ends in the game so both of you guys are protected.
Because you're right. So they need protection for Sombrio if they're going to keep him there. So do you have a strong opinion one way or the other of what you might do? Is it worth trying to switch sides with the two tackles, or would you try to keep it intact and with the idea that, okay, my game plan is going to be to help him all day long?
Don't disrupt what you already started the game, which is Nate and Dennis getting on the same page. They've got a nice rapport going. You know what I'm saying? Now you're going to switch that, you know? And then then now you got two situations to deal with. You've got whoever's going to replace Dennis, them trying to get on the same page as Nate, and then you've got now Dennis trying to get on the same page as Roger. If you just left the right side as it is and then let Ty work his way through practice, maybe it's been a couple of weeks of just you know, learning and protecting him. Maybe the left side is the strong side for a couple of weeks. You know what I mean? Or back chips on his way out onto the left side, or they slide to the left side. Protect him in any way you can, but I don't think that you flip-flop personnel. I just think that you let Ty work his way into getting comfortable and just doing what you can in the run game and play action to stay on the field.
Brad Hopkins is with us, former Titans left tackle and 102.5 The Game alum as well. Always good to have him on. So the rookie Isaiah Wilson, his first-round pick, you hear that and you go, okay, well, he should be a factor here. He should be playing. Obviously, there were some conditioning things. He was on the COVID list. There was a lot stacked against him. But what should be expected of that young man if and when he is available to play for this team?
So Isaiah came into his career like I did, grossly overweight, not prepared mentally. The struggle was real. As the 13th pick, I didn't have an option to just, you know, kind of figure it out. You know, I beat out Kevin Donnelly for the left tackle spot, and I was baptized by fire. And it wasn't comfortable. I remember John McClain saying that I was a bust. I remember the writers talking about my struggle from week to week, even though we won 11 straight games and went into the playoffs. I don't know how the hell I made the all-rookie team, but I did. It wasn't easy. Unless there's some sort of drastic, you know, sense of urgency that Isaiah all of a sudden experiences, he's going to struggle and do the same things, and they can't afford that. So unless someone has grabbed him by the cheeks and said, hey, look here, bro, we need you to grow up and grow up fast, I say you stick with Ty and let it work itself out. Now, I know that he's, you know, first-round pick, and I'm not even sure what number he was in the whole deal, but, you know, the expectation was for him to at least see some action. But at 350 pounds, how much of that is legit? Do you need to play at that? Can you play the fourth quarter like you played the first quarter? Are you ready to do that? If not, then you're going to be a liability to this offense, you know? So I know the future may be bright for this young man, but he didn't come into it mentally or physically prepared.
How do you, and do you ever, shake the whole, I'm a first-round pick, I have to play like a first-round pick, when in reality, you know, and I know I've had the conversation with Derek that was a fourth-round pick, it's completely different, that you just have to go out and do your job and play and not worry about where you were drafted. But did you ever shake that, or is it possible to do?
It goes with you your entire career. Because where you were picked in the draft sets the level of expectation. I've had to talk to so many people about Bryson being inactive because he's a fourth-round pick. There are a lot of guys that are in the fourth round that don't see the field until maybe years two or three. And Bryson happens to be behind some really good tight ends out there between Everett and Higbee. They're doing the damn thing. You know, and you know Sean loves the tight end in his offense. So it makes sense for Bryson to still be inactive. But he's going to get his shot, and I just tell him every time just to be ready when it comes. But the expectation for him isn't near what it was, like it was for me, at the 13th pick. So what that comes along with me is, well, that dude was a first-rounder. Is he living up to being a first-round pick? Is he living up to being a top 15 pick in a draft? If not, then there's things that are said. You know what I mean? Like, he was picked in the first round? What? You know what I mean? Or, man, that dude was first-rounder for real. You know what I mean? That goes with you forever.
And we talk about that with Corey Davis. He's a prime example. And, you know, we all have opinions on this show. He was the fifth overall pick, and he hadn't played like the fifth overall pick. Now, has he had a really good start to this year? Sure. He's helped them win some games. He's been a big part of that. But, like, in my opinion, and you tell me if you agree or disagree, he's learned to coexist with the fact that he was the fifth overall pick, and he's now kind of putting it aside and just going out and doing his job.
Van Jefferson was the first pick of the Rams draft, right? Van Jefferson has seen maybe 20 or 30 snaps in the regular season games. He's doing a really good job. There are some guys that don't see the field immediately. You know, that it does take them a little bit of time to process, to feel comfortable in what they're doing, you know, to really then put their stamp on it and go on to be professionals. And, you know, the NFL, it doesn't give you that timetable, you know what I mean? It doesn't give you the luxury of figuring it out on your own. You know, you put in there, and if you can do it, you can do it. If you can't, you're out. You know, that's the unfortunate part. But if you can hang on long enough And sure, Corey probably got awakened, Chase, by the fact that they didn't pick up that rookie option, right? And with that reality, like, you know, I need to step my game up or do something that's going to help me. You can put some good tape out there for the team that does take a chance on me next. But either way, it just takes some time for some players. But I still think that Corey Davis is going to be a very, very productive receiver in years to come.
You brought up Bryson being with the Rams. Your story is different from his story, but how much have you been able to kind of look at different moments, whether it's a conversation with a Bruce Matthews or a Mike Munchak when you needed it, and relay some of that to him as he's going through his process?
Yeah, for everybody it's different. You know, I was drafted, you know, and played 10 years alongside of a Hall of Famer. The guy I got drafted next to when I came in as a rookie is also a Hall of Famer, Mike Munchak, went on to be our coach. You know, Bryson's situation is not that. But what I can articulate to him are some of the struggles that I had and how those struggles poured into me to make me who I am. So everything he's going through right now are pieces of who Bryson is to become, you know? And I just constantly remind him and everybody else, too, that I talk to that, you know, a father would only want his son to be as good as he meant to be. And that's all it is. I mean, that's all I can do is be there when he needs me. And just watch his journey like my dad did me.
So John McClain called you a bust?
Sure did. Mm. Regularly.
That guy will never make it in the business.
But I've also since had him on our shows on SiriusXM, and we have a great time. Because, you know, he didn't see me, Darren, going on to a couple of Pro Bowls, being an All-Pro, and us getting to the Super Bowl and all this other stuff, nor could he foresee that.
Yeah.
But what he was seeing in this young kid that looked like Isaiah Wilson – right? I was 346 pounds.
Mm.
I'm 246 now.
I was going to say, that was probably 100 pounds ago, wasn't it?
100 pounds ago, Darren. Mm. 100 pounds ago. And the thing is, I play the first quarter hell on wheels, right? But then I'm exhausted. I'm spent. I'm breaking character. I've screwed my technique up because I'm exhausted. John McAvoy in college used to tell us, fatigue makes cowards of us all. And it's true. You got to, if you can get that bugaboo under control, then you've got a lot to work with.
Yeah. Hey, good stuff as always. Always good to hear from you. Continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you down the road.
You guys have a great afternoon.
All right, you too. Brad Hopkins, long-time left tackle for the Oilers/Titans. He was drafted first round in 93. Is that right?
Yep.
So 27 years ago, John McClain called him up a Dove colossal bust. For the then Houston Oilers. That's pretty funny. All right. We'll step away quickly, come back, and wrap up the second hour. Charlie Batch to start the third hour. Darren Donick and Chase, that's next.